Bacon. Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? Who's there? What's going on?
You're listening to our number two in the doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
How you doing?
It's the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I've ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
Welcome back, hour number two. Tom Abraham Show, Tradition Tuesday. In the doghouse. Of course, today's tradition is the whole practice of NFL preseason games and how they started and when they started and how they used to play against other leagues and cool stuff like that, little tidbits, and how back in the 50s, it was a 12-game regular season and there was a 6-game preseason. They played a half a season of preseason games before they got to the regular season games, and then they played six in the 70s. They played 6 preseason games when they had 14 games, so it was nearly a half a season. Shortly after the first preseason game, the first preseason line came out, and there was action to be had on those games. I'm just saying. I may have made that up. I'm not sure. But joining us now, a guy who knows his way around the table, if you will, Kevin Rogers from VegasInsider.com. K-Rodge, welcome back. How are you, man?
Which table is that?
Well, I don't know. I figure, you know, you must play a little Texas Hold'em once in a while or something, right?
I thought it was like Baccarat or something like that.
No, that thing, I still don't understand that whole Baccarat thing. And, you know, I don't get that. Yeah. I see that you have a play for Thursday night in the NFL. Is that right? You got something you're feeling really good about Thursday night, huh?
You know what? I'll give it away here. I'm not going to do the old, oh, it's a 100,000 star lock and come to my site and buy it.
It's not the lock of the year.
You know, Baltimore at Miami coming up on Thursday night, and the Dolphins are coming off this win over the Falcons past Thursday. Mm-hmm. And obviously now you start the Jay Cutler era that he'll play on Thursday night. And the Dolphins just had the worst luck in the world so far in this preseason, with Ryan Tannehill getting hurt, with their top or their second pick, who was going to be a starting linebacker, Raekwon McMillan out of Ohio State, tore his ACL early in the Falcons game. And now Tony Lippett, cornerback, he got hurt, tore his Achilles tendon. He's out for the season. They've had so many of these injuries. Jay Ajayi was in the concussion protocol. He's out of it now, but who knows when he's coming back. And they've had so many issues right now that I think they're just trying to get healthy. And Baltimore's had their problems, obviously, with Joe Flacco being hurt. But the Ravens look pretty good in their opener against Washington. They won that game by 20. John Harbaugh has been a very good preseason coach. They were 4-0 last year. They won their opener. They're 7-1 against the spread. Their last 8 on the road in preseason. So I think taking the points in Baltimore on Thursday, I know I would say tread lightly in the preseason, but I like Baltimore in the points.
Oh, I'm seeing Joe Flacco listed as probable. Is that right? I didn't even know he was playing in the preseason. I didn't realize they're saying,
you know,
now
that
probable.
That may be for the opener against Cincinnati. So that's where I'm not too sure if he's going to play Thursday. But I think the probable is more for the regular season opener.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Because they got it listed at the site underneath the game. You know, it says Joe Flacco probable. But, yeah, 2.5 points for Miami. So you're getting points with Baltimore. And you're thinking Miami's just mailing it in, right? Just get Jay Cutler out there for some play time and then just basically try and get off the field without getting anybody else hurt.
Well, I don't want to say mail it in, but when you look back at the Atlanta game, they had a 99-yard touchdown pass. I mean, they were down in that game. They weren't playing very well, and they came back against Atlanta's third string, and I feel like John Harbaugh, you know, plays to win in these preseason games. So, you know, Miami wasn't completely sharp in that game. They just hit a couple big plays, and I think that that helped them win. So, I mean, now that, you know, the Dolphins are almost a field goal favorite, I'll go the other way.
So do you think that the win totals for the Bears with Mitchell Trubisky and the Browns with DeShone Kizer and of course DeShone Watson, who was outstanding for the Texans, you think they all jump like two or three games now? Because I'm thinking Cleveland's definitely, 10-11 win team now that I've seen DeShone Kizer play the second half of that game.
Yeah, I mean, the Steelers really have to watch themselves. The Browns are coming. I don't think that really either of those win totals are going to be adjusted that much just over what we've seen in the preseason. And both quarterbacks played well in their respective openers. Obviously, Trubisky, who was a guy that a lot of people questioned why Chicago would trade up with San Francisco. I mean, you know, it's one thing to say that the Eagles went after Carson Wentz out of a school that nobody ever saw on television. They're kind of like, who is this guy? Trubisky still played at a big school in North Carolina. It was still pretty decent. So, I mean, people are so shocked by it. Like, they never heard of the guy before. And you look at Kizer, who came out of Notre Dame, and obviously his relationship with Brian Kelly, I guess, soured towards the end. But then again, what does Brian Kelly really want at Notre Dame? But besides that point, you know, these teams really need some kind of resurgence, and they need something at the quarterback position. So it's still asking a lot for them to be a 500-type team. But at the same time, you know, there are teams to look at. I don't know about necessarily win totals to go there, considering who's in Cleveland's division. And then you look at Chicago, where Minnesota's still good, Detroit's all right, the Packers are the favorite. That they're still pretty much last place teams in their division. So I would say maybe look at them week to week and see what kind of value you can get probably early on in the season with them.
Right. Kevin Rogers with us from VegasInsider.com. The one that really, in all seriousness, I put next to zero amount of stock into the preseason, especially the very early preseason. I mean, it's nice to see those guys can line up and make a pass and make a play, and you can kind of get a little bit of a feel. But the one that did impress me, because I really think the AFC South is up in the air. I think the Jags are going to be better, but they're the only team that I wouldn't put in the mix. I think it's a full-blown three-team tussle, depending on what Andrew Luck is going to do. And not only did DeShone Kizer look good, I mean, good, that whatever that thing is, I believe in being a winner, and he's got that it thing, whatever it is. But that back as well, Deontay Foreman out of Texas, I think they got something going on there. And if that defense continues to play at the level that they were playing at the last couple of years, I know the trendy pick has been the Titans, and I'm certainly pulling for the Titans. But I, the Texans, you know, that could be the missing element. They've never had a quarterback, you know, that was worth a flip since they came into the league back in whatever, 2002.
Matt Schaub was decent. He's the only quarterback that's been all right for them, and they had Andre Johnson and they had Arian Foster. So he was decent. I'm not going to say that Schaub was a thumb necessarily when he was with the Texans, but. You know, you have a lot of these quarterbacks that went in the first round of the draft where DeShone Watson, say what you will, he went to two national championships, won the final one on the final drive against Alabama. That's got to mean something, you know, and he's got pretty much a cannon. I saw that game against Carolina. He threw one ball down the field. I said, wow. I mean, he just unloaded it. But for for these teams, for Houston, like we mentioned, Chicago and Cleveland, what are your options? You know, and not to say just put in the rookie to put him in, but who is Brock Osweiler? He proved to be nothing in Houston. In Chicago, Mike Glennon, like, what is he? Like, I just don't know where these teams, what they're accomplishing by going to some guy that will be mediocre and then get the rookie just ready. I think that you can plug in DeShone Watson early on. You can't plug in Trubisky or Kizer. That if that's your best option, you might as well go for it. That the NFL is a win-now league, and there's no reason why. You know, it's one thing to say, again, this is a stretch, but, you know, the Packers draft Aaron Rodgers. Okay, we'll sit him because we have Brett Favre. So it's okay. We're still going to win with Brett Favre, and then eventually Aaron Rodgers will be our quarterback.
Right.
But the Packers were in that. They had that luxury to do that. These teams don't have that luxury. These teams are terrible. And, I mean, I understand Houston won their division last year, which isn't saying much because the Colts took a step back and everybody in that division is kind of average. But these teams need quarterbacks desperately, and if you got to plug in a rookie, you got to plug in a rookie.
Well, and in the case of DeShone Watson, he played it out. He went back for a senior year. We saw what the Cowboys did with a rookie quarterback last year, a fourth-round draft pick, and that's very, very rare. But still, I mean, they had a great season, 12-4, and a playoff team and all of that. So with Houston, and they're not asking the guy to do everything because they've got a great defense. They're going to have a good running game. They've got a good offensive line. They got weapons. With the Browns and the Bears, there's two schools of thought. One, what are you waiting for? You know, go ahead and get these guys in there. Let them get their licks in. Let them learn, and the team will catch up. And in the next couple of years, you'll know whether or not you got your quarterback. But the flip side is, do you destroy a guy? You know, do you, well, you rush him out there and you destroy him? You know, the Osweiler thing, I think the Browns signed that guy. I mean, they bought a draft pick. They moved up way up in the draft. I think they got a second-round draft pick with that. And they almost shipped him to Miami. You know, they that was the deal that Miami was going to make pre-Jay Cutler. It's just they wanted too much from Miami. I think they were looking to get him, and then maybe they could move him. But in Chicago, I mean, Mike Glennon, they paid that guy a lot of money on what? I mean, what did you ever see out of Mike Glennon that would, you know, that would make you think that he's going to hold anybody off?
Well, didn't Seattle do the same thing with Matt Flynn? They had no quarterback. Matt Flynn throws 5 touchdown passes for the Packers in their final game against a huge deal in Seattle.
It's a big, yeah,
all of a sudden, they draft Russell Wilson in the mid rounds, thinking, okay, let's just pick him up. Guy ends up starting the first game of the season, and now we've seen what he is, a Super Bowl champion. So these teams make these rash moves just to get a guy, and you never know who you're going to draft and who could end up being your guy that's even a rookie. But what I go back to is this, that when are you ever going to be ready? That, you know, you say, oh, we'll let these guys sit on the bench. So what? Mitchell Trubisky sits on the bench in Chicago. The Bears go 4-12, and he's ready the next year. And then what happens the next year if he doesn't play that well? I just don't understand the whole, these guys, they're not mentally tough enough to do this. What other option do you have? And, yeah, these guys may get bashed out there, but let them play, and maybe you'll get a guy that can actually be decent and lead your franchise.
Yeah, and create a little bit of excitement for your team as well. All right, shifting gears, just taking a look ahead now that we're really starting to close in. Now, there are going to be opportunities coming up on the 26th. People forget that the college football season actually starts on the 26th, and there are a number of games involving Power 5 teams. I mean, you got Oregon State playing that day against Colorado State. You've got South Florida, which is going to be a top 25 team. They're playing against San Jose State. You got the game down under. You got Stanford playing that day as well. But having said that, going to the second, this is when everybody's really kind of focused on. First off, on that Michigan-Florida game, with Antonio Callaway being suspended, and also they lose a defensive lineman that's in the rotation for them, I was kind of surprised. Not much of a move there. That was a 3.5 to 4 point line Michigan's favored. And there was really no move. Were you surprised that, you know, one of the few outside weapons that Florida has that we know about, and we don't know who the quarterback is for Florida yet, that that thing is sitting steady at 3.5 right now?
Well, it's a little scary simply because, I mean, they're two big-name schools, so it's not like saying that, you know, you have one big-name school and one non-big-name, and obviously they're playing a neutral site in Texas, so there's no home field advantage taken away at all or going each way, whatever the case may be. But, you know, like you mentioned, the quarterback situation is a question mark. I feel like the quarterback situation is a question mark in Florida since Tim Tebow left, that you really haven't had a guy that you can depend on for the Gators. And when the line doesn't move that much, you have those many guys out, it does raise a little bit of a red flag. I mean, I stay away from that game. I don't really think that you should take games in which a bunch of guys are suspended, because now things change. And you know what it is too, Tom, and you've been around sports a long time. When someone gets suspended or hurt, the guy behind him, no matter what kind of talent level he is going to try to do what he can to win that job. So whoever all those backups are that are going to take those positions that day, they're playing Michigan in a big nationally televised game in Jerry's World, that you're going to get a really, really good effort out of those guys. So I don't think you can necessarily say, oh, well, Florida's going to lose now, because it's still Florida. You know, they still have a lot of talent on that team, and I just don't know how people can automatically go to, well, we're actually going to go against Florida just because all these guys are out. I mean, are they that big of difference makers where you have to go against them that day? So I would either, I'd stay away from them, but also maybe there's an opportunity where these guys may step up that game and play well.
You know what's interesting about Florida, what you said about the quarterback situation there? I mean, think about it. The guy who was going to follow Tim Tebow was Cam Newton. I mean, he was there until he decided to snatch up somebody's laptop or whatever it is that he did. And so, you know, because I remember him backing up Tebow and seeing him actually play a little bit at Florida. So he was going to be the next dude there. Then they had Jeff Driskel there. He ends up, losing the gig and ends up at, what, Louisiana Tech or something like that. And he ends up getting drafted into the NFL. They had Jacoby Brissett, who apparently couldn't play for Florida, but ends up, you know, at North Carolina State and ends up getting drafted into the NFL playing for the New England Patriots now. It's like, I don't know if Florida has a problem getting quarterbacks or if they haven't had anybody there in the last 10 years, their 8 years, that they recognize what a quarterback's supposed to look like.
Yeah, it's been a big problem. Their offense hasn't been very good, and they have an offensive guy in McElwain, you know, the shark lover who's there, and obviously that, you know, it hasn't worked out to their benefit yet. And, you know, I'll give the Gators credit at least. You know, they're leaving the state to play somebody at a conference to start the season, so I got to give them that because they haven't done that in like a million years, so at least at least they're doing that, and that would be a really nice win for them if they went down to Dallas and they beat Michigan.
It's funny. I talked to our Gators insider yesterday, ostensibly about Callaway, but you know who has the edge in the, according to him, from what they've been seeing and what they're being told by coaches and so on and so forth there, in the Felipe Franks versus Malik Zaire battle, you know who has the edge? Luke Del Rio. Right now they're saying that they really like Luke Del Rio. It might hold off these other two guys. Everybody just kind of, well, Luke Del Rio, you know, he was a stopgap guy. He's playing for his sixth school and all this kind of stuff. But from what I'm hearing, coming out of Florida 2 weeks into their camp, Luke Del Rio is the best-looking quarterback they got, which is maybe concerning. I don't know.
Yeah, and also, you know, you look at Zaire, who's a question mark. I remember when Everett Golson went to Florida State before Jameis Winston got there.
Right.
You know, you said that, oh, I got a guy from Notre Dame, and he didn't impress at all. So, really, there's no guarantee when you have these players that play these other big schools and transfer. There's no guarantee. I mean, yes, you got the Russell Wilsons going from NC State to Wisconsin. You know, you get some players that can do it, but otherwise, there's no guarantee because you play at a big school, you can go to another big school and be successful.
Yeah. And the game that I'll be at, Florida State and Alabama, the beautiful new Mercedes-Benz Dome. Alabama opened up as a 5.5-point favorite, and that game's been kind of sitting on that very key number of 7 since then. Do you think it goes to the gate at that? It seems like a lot of points for Florida State to get. I know Alabama's had a record in these you know, these season opening games where they've been pretty strong, but man, I'll tell you what, you know, Florida State's number 3 in the country. A legit team with a legit quarterback and a legit coaching staff, and they're getting 7 in a neutral site game. You think it holds at that number, or do you think it'll creep down a little?
I don't know. I mean, I look at this line, and it scares me because I feel like it's a, you know, Florida State's a big public dog in this one for the reasons you said, and Alabama losing the national championship you know, to close out last year. Again, neutral site game, and nobody really has an advantage. This isn't the Georgia Dome where Alabama's played there a lot, you know, and Florida State really has. I mean, it's a brand-new stadium where the Falcons are playing, so a little bit different. But I got to believe there's a big Alabama contingent there, and obviously Florida State will travel well also. But it feels like a lot of people want to go to the Florida State's getting a lot of points. You might as well take them. I'm not too sure about that. I don't know if this could be a game where, you know, think about it. If Alabama wins the game by 10, maybe they don't blow them out, but they still cover.
Well, and that's what happened a few years ago. Everybody, you know, thought, ooh, look, Alabama, you know, they when they beat West Virginia, I think it was, by 10, and Clint Trickett had that big game, and White, the receiver that's at Chicago Bears now, had a big game, and everybody was like, ooh, you know, West Virginia hung within 10, you know, of Alabama there. That was, you know, Alabama didn't exactly blow them. Well, they were 9.5-point favorites. They covered. I mean, they covered. You know, what do you want to do? You want to see every game is supposed to be, you know, what they did to USC an opening game? It's not going to be like that. Now, USC was being talked up a lot last year. We saw the way that went. But Florida State is coming off a much better year than USC was coming. USC was more smoke and mirrors, I thought, and it turned out they had the wrong quarterback playing. Whereas I think Florida State's more established than what USC was last year.
Yeah, I mean, Dalvin Cook is gone. A couple guys on defense are gone. I mean, we'll see if Francois can hold up behind that offensive line. So there's, you know, obviously, I mean, they're very good, but there's also question marks there as well. And, yeah, I mean, Francois got knocked around last year. I'll give him a lot of credit that he took a lot of hits. He really did. And now you're facing this defense. So I pray for him. I hope that he doesn't get killed back there against Alabama.
They really, I'll say this about Alabama. Man, do they have a red ass about losing that last game. I mean, when you listen to these kids talk, you would think that they were 1-14 last year instead of 14-1. I mean, when they talk, all they talk about, they got that thing playing in a loop in the locker room, and they won't let them forget it. They got signs up and pitchers and all this stuff in the weight room. And I know that sounds like corny stuff, but these are college kids, and they do react to that. And, you know, we've seen that team go scorched earth before coming off of a, you know, a wake-up call type of loss. And I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting. But, you know, new coordinator on offense, you know, who knows. But a lot of weapons. But it's going to be very, very interesting to see, you know, how they come out of the gate.
Yeah,
especially against an ACC team.
You know, again, Alabama, you know, they've had a great track record early in the season. I mean, they have a great track record throughout most of the season. But, you know, this is a team, I would say the times to go against them are when they are huge home favorites. That's probably when, I mean, when you get them on the road in reasonable numbers, I think that those are times maybe to look at them. I mean, if they're laying 28 points in Middle Tennessee State, that could be a time to go against them. But when they're reasonable numbers, I think those are the times maybe to look at them.
I'm for Auburn's sake, I mean, they're going to beat Georgia Southern, but they're laying like 35 points to Georgia Southern. That Georgia Southern team is freaky, man. They ran the ball for over 300 yards against Alabama a couple of years ago, and it's a different kind of offense to get ready for. And, you know, I think Auburn's going to get their points, but 35 points is a lot of points to lay. I mean, they can win that game by 3-4 touchdowns in a breeze. And not show too much with a game coming up against Clemson the next week. I don't know, man. Georgia Southern getting 35 in that game. That's one of the best teams in the Sun Belt. And it just feels like a lot. It's one of them dangerous spots. I would warn Auburn fan, you know, don't be laying 35 week one when you got Clemson coming up week two, and they might just kind of slow play that a little bit, you know?
Yeah, and also, I mean, Georgia Southern, they had that coach that ran that triple option with the Tulane. So, you know, Georgia Southern is still a decent team. And, you know, you got to wonder if Auburn is really going to call up the dogs in that game or what. Had a lot of pressure on Auburn again this year, you know, to try to really be a force there in the SEC West.
All right, before I let you go, you're based out of Miami there. You know, very quietly, we're seeing Giancarlo Stanton just absolutely explode. If he makes it to the end of the season, this is usually when he gets hurt, but if he makes it to the end of the season, he's got a real live shot at maybe hitting 60 home runs, which, you know, now in the non-juiced era is a big deal again. But he quietly went through waivers. Nobody picked up that, you know, teams had an opportunity to pick him up. He would have been revoked, I would imagine, if they'd have done that. But he quietly went through waivers. He's got this monster contract that'll pay him, you know, another $300 million between now and the time he's 37 years old. But what are the chances with this team now being sold to this Derek Jeter-led group? What are the chances of him being moved, being traded before the end of the month?
I gotta believe he doesn't get traded. I really, you know, you gotta give a lot for this guy. He still has so much left in the tank that I don't know how. You know, the Marlins obviously suffered that devastating loss to Jose Fernandez last year. You know, if they lost Fernandez and Stanton, you know, in a little over a year, what do you have to watch in this team? I mean, Stanton's the only attraction now on this team. They're not going to the playoffs, but the only thing that really to watch is this guy hit mammoth home runs. So I got to believe that they keep him, and I don't know what the new ownership group is going to do as far as if they want to stick with that contract or not. But I just don't know how. I mean, this guy right now is the biggest star in South Florida by far.
Yeah. All right, man. Appreciate you as always. Good work. And we'll actually have a slate of games in college football to talk about next week as well. And we'll catch up again. Kevin Rogers, it's VegasInsider.com is where you find him. Get his picks there. He's still making great baseball picks, and he's giving you a little preseason action as well. Likes the Ravens getting 2.5, 3 points tomorrow or Thursday night against the Miami Dolphins. So keep an eye on that as well. K-Raj, thanks, man.
All right, Tom, you got it. See ya.
Let's grab a break. When we come back, Dave South will join us, the voice of the Texas A&M Aggies for one more year. We'll talk to Dave South next right here at 730-1039. The
Ump. Read the sign. Beware of dog. Tom Abraham is back.
Going to throw here to Parker at the 20, at the 15, at the 10, at the 5. He is almost. He got a touchdown! He got a touchdown! He got a touchdown! He got a touchdown! He got it in! He got it in! He got it in! Oh, doctor! Oh, my goodness!
They are mobbing him.
It is bedlam here! Sir Parker
It's the 32-yard pass. The Aggies have won the Big 12 championship in overtime against Kansas.
He's inside the 10. He's inside the 5. He's fighting for the end zone. He scored a touchdown.
It's one of the great voices of college football. We do a segment all season long, Voices of the SEC. Dave South has been our guest on that, but obviously so much more than the SEC. He's been the voice of the Aggies since, what, 85, something like that. And he joins us now on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP Hotline. Dave, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, thanks a lot. I'm doing great. Thank you.
I got to get this in because a listener sent me this email when he saw the tweet go out that we were having you on as part of our guest list today. And if I don't do it off the top, I'll forget it. He said, thanks for bringing Dave South on. I'm an old Ag class of 84. I've been listening to Dave since he's been in College Station. If you have the chance, ask him to share a Rodney Thomas story, one of my favorite people, and he had ties to the Titans, good man who left us way too soon. Okay, a Rodney Thomas story for Terry, who sent an email in special for you.
Well, I don't know what story he's talking about. The one that I guess I would share, first of all, is that, number one, he was one of my favorite all-time Aggie players. But we won the – I don't know what bowl game it was, but Rodney, the team, each one of the players got a watch as one of their gifts for going to the bowl game. When Rodney got home to Groveton, Texas, he found out there was a young man who was going through a tough time in his life. I think he was probably a junior high player or a junior high student there in Groveton. Rodney went over to his house, talked to him for a while, and gave him his bowl watch. Mm. And that was one example of Rodney Thomas and the kind of heart that he had. I know, too, that one time some of the players had noticed that if you did something to a soft drink machine, it would pay off like a slot machine. And coins were just flowing out of that thing. And Rodney was going over there and telling them, hey, don't be taking that money. Well, they took it. So Rodney went back to his room. He collected all of the money he had, went back and waited for the soft drink guy to show up. And he said, can you tell how much money you're missing? Well, the guy told him, and Rodney reimbursed him for all of that coinage that was taken out of that machine. So there's two Rodney Thomas stories that I think are real special.
Yeah, he was a special guy, no question about it. Dave South with us. All right, final season, you'll do football and basketball, correct? You're going to do basketball this year.
Yes.
Yeah, and then that'll be it. 72 years old.
I'm going to continue the relationship with baseball.
Oh, so you're going to continue with baseball. Okay, well, that's good. That's good to hear. But, you know, I know you've been doing this 47 years, but, you know, we see so many broadcasters now that kind of extend it and keep going to a longer age even than you. Why now? What made you the decision for you to pull the plug now after the season?
Well, I still have my voice. I still have my voice, and yeah. I still can remember who we're playing. That helps. and who the players are. I'm 72 now, and unfortunately, I think there have been some guys down through the years that have hung on too long, and they probably would tell you that after right. they had retired. I'm not going to be one of those people, even though I guess there are some people that think I've hung on too long by going 32 years at A&M. But this is the right time for me to do it. My health is still great, and there's some things that we want to do between now and the time that the Lord decides to take me home. But I'm going to hike to the bottom of the Grand Canyon and spend the night. We're going to go to Cooperstown. We're going to go to D.C. We have an RV and we like to travel on that. We use it to go a lot out of the football games. And so I'm going to cut out 2/3 of my schedule so that we're free to do some of the things in the fall that you can't do in the summertime because it's too hot.
Yeah, it's tremendous. I read the quote that from the story where you said God assigns certain jobs for certain times when it's important to respond obediently. It's also vital we understand when an assignment is finished. Diligence and job completion honor the Lord, but resistance to change and refusal to let go can hinder his plan. That's beautiful, man. I mean, that's really good.
Thanks. Yeah, it means a lot to me. And I've had a great career. I've done lots of different things. I've traveled all over the country and I've met a lot of good people, a lot of good coaches, and it's just time to do some other things in my life.
Yeah. All right. Now, I've been 20 years now since I got out of coaching. I'm 56 years old. I've been 20 years this fall on the air, and I remember getting out of coaching and doing some TV right off the bat and then doing some high school games and, you know, having to stick a phone line back in that had broke and everything else. It seems like 5 minutes ago, Dave. It seems like last season. Yeah. Now, for you, you know, 47 years, I mean, does it, can you remember the very beginning? Like it was just like a couple of weeks ago?
My wife and I were talking, and I wish I had done something that I didn't do, and that was to write in a journal when I first started doing this, every game that I ever did. So I can go back and reflect on that because some people have asked me about that. I was watching, I did some NBA work at one time back in the late 70s and early 80s, and I was sitting there and I was watching this game, and it was a classic game. They were replaying the San Antonio Spurs and Los Angeles Lakers, and I kept looking at that, and I finally said, well, that looks familiar. And all of a sudden there was a sideline shot there on the inbounds play, and there I was broadcasting the game. And so I had forgotten I had been there for that game, but I didn't keep a journal. But there are some highlights that, you know, the big ones you can remember, but some of those that, you know, just they've gone into the reeds and they've disappeared, and I'll probably never remember them unless I get something out and look at a recap of a certain game.
I have somewhere in a box a VHS tape of the
first.
Let me
ask you this. As a coach, you could probably go back because, you were involved and you were right there. And this is what I've noticed about coaches. They can go back to a down and distance and time in a game and recall something that may have happened about 10 or 15 years earlier than what we were talking about. Did you have that happen to you?
All the time. I mean, all the time. I remember an onside kick that Hobart College recovered against us that sticks with me to this day because it was a bad alignment by me. And I was like, why did I do that? It changed the role. I remember it was yesterday. It was crazy. I'm lucky, fortunate enough to have a VHS tape of the first college game I did on TV, which was Colgate and Cornell. And somebody had taped it, and I have. Now, I don't know if it works. I haven't seen a VHS player in forever.
Oh, you need to get that out. You need to get it out and look at it.
I got to get it out. I got to get it out and have it put on a CD or a digital file or something. And then I have audio cassettes of some of the first games that I did when I started doing, you know, like high school games and stuff. And so, you know, it'd be neat to kind of go back and listen to that stuff. The thing that strikes me, and I'd love to get your take on this, the technology change. Just in my 20 years, the gear that you used to show up with to set up a booth 20 years ago and how we did it, and now you could do a whole game with a laptop. I mean, it's crazy, the technology.
Oh, yeah.
But just talk about the way it was 47 years ago and what you've seen.
Well, I remember when I was working for the old Southwest Conference Network, and every engineer, they went out and they contracted with these guys, and nobody had the same type of equipment. Nobody. And you didn't know what you were going to get unless you'd worked for this guy a few times. And I remember this one poor engineer. I went to Ohio State to do a Southwest Conference game, and the airline had left his equipment back at in Houston where he was from. So he had to go beg, borrow, and steal from radio stations that night all across Columbus. And when I walked in the booth the next day, folks aren't going to remember what this looks like, but the microphone, it was called a salt shaker microphone, and that's what it looked like. And normally they place it on a gooseneck. The only way he could make that work for me that day was to take a coat hanger and wire it to that microphone and hang that coat hanger around my neck. And so it's changed. Now it's really fancy headsets and the whole works, and everything is miniaturization. And like you said, we're on the internet now, but it's changed dramatically. It might take two or three suitcases to get everything, equipment cases, everything we needed to do a broadcast into that booth.
I remember even starting with high school back in the late 90s that they would have to, months in advance, they would be calling and ordering phone lines, you know, to be put into these press boxes and things like that. And that's the other thing that I have seen change is that nowadays, and every once in a while I'll still do a high school game. I got a son that's a senior now, so I've stayed away from it for the last couple of years. I've been going to his games. I don't want to miss his games to go do a game. But there are stadiums we go to now and broadcast a high school game, and the press box in the high school stadium, an on-campus high school stadium, is nicer and better than some college press boxes were 20 years ago. I mean, it was like they built some of these stadiums with no idea that somebody was going to try and broadcast the game, standing on crates and doing all kinds of goofy stuff. And now they're luxurious air-conditioned press conference or press boxes at high schools.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? In the early days before they renovated their press box, Texas Tech, I've always found, and I've said this, and this is just how it is, that visiting radio is dead last on the list whenever you go do a game somewhere. Visiting radio, they just don't care about you. And the Tech booth at one time was wide enough for two people to stand at the front of the booth and look out on the field. The engineer was out in the hall, and rather than have a door, they had a tarp hanging like a shower curtain. And so those were some of the facilities that you would work out of. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, sometimes things don't go as well as you want to electronically. I remember talking to, I believe it was Joe over at LSU. They had no phone in the press box. They were doing it on what I guess they called a voice coupler. He went to the phone booth outside the stadium, called back to the network, "Are you getting it?" And they said, "Yes, everything's fine." He went back up. There was no way to contact him. They did that whole game, only to find out that it had disconnected and they got nothing and there was no way to call him.
Oh, my. I remember doing games where you didn't have talkback, and you would literally have to time. When you go to a commercial break, they'd tell you, "Well, it's a 90-second break." I said, "Okay, tell me when I'm back." "We can't talk to you." So you'd have to watch your watch for 90 seconds and just blindly come back and hope that you were back on the air.
I feel your pain because I've done the very same thing.
Dave South with us, retiring after this season of basketball. Continue to do baseball for Texas A&M. Great baseball program, so he'll certainly have some excitement there as well. And one other one is we showed up one time, Dave, at RPI. Now they've got a beautiful stadium there, but we were doing a TV game at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in up by Albany. And we got there and we're like, "Well, where's the press box?" It was a press box on the home side. And they said, "Well, there was no room for the TV crew there." And this was on a network. This was on the Empire Sports Network. And they said, "Well, where are we doing it from?" "You're doing it from the visitor side." "Yeah, but there's nothing over there." And they said, no. "You see the dorm room? We set you up in the dorm room that overlooks the stadium." we're on a third floor dorm room with a window open doing a game out of a dorm room on TV. And this is in the 90s.
Well, now that's a topper right there. There's no way in the world anybody's going to top that story. It's never been that bad for me.
Yeah, well,
I'll tell you that when Oklahoma State remodeled their stadium, they were taking in the walkthrough, and this was probably July or so, and the SID happened to be with him, and he's looking, and he goes, "Where are the radio booths, and where are the coaches' booths, where the coaches watch the game?" And they start looking at each other, and they go, "We don't have one." They ended up having to build a little hut up on top of the stadium that had both home and visiting radio and had the coaches' booth for both Oklahoma State and the visitors. And they finished it literally 1 hour before Iowa State, they were playing a conference game that year, before Iowa State was to go on the air. They got it wired so that they could get on the air for that game. Now, that was a major mistake.
Yeah, that's crazy. Dave South with us, Texas A&M broadcaster, voice of the Aggies. All right, so you go out to UCLA to kick this season off on a Sunday game that the whole country will be watching. Pre-NFL, which is a really great way to showcase the program. The question is, who's going to be under center when they come out? Is Kevin Sumlin going to keep this a secret right to the end, or when are we going to have a decision whether it's Starkel or Hooban?
I don't miss my bet. I think it's probably going to be Thursday or Friday of this week.
Okay.
I think he's kind of said that it would be 2 weeks out, and that's how he's been doing it for the last few years, even since Manziel. And that first year with Johnny in the SEC, I think he'll announce it Thursday or Friday. Personally, I think that Starkel's probably got the inside on that, just simply because he's been there longer than Kellen Mond has. So I think Nick Starkel probably will get the nod, and then it'll be his, I guess, to hold on to. And generally, what it's been is it's a quarterback competition the entire year, and that's always the way he's kind of gone his approach towards starters and who's backing up, that you got to go out each week and win that position back in a game or in practice. So I think Thursday or Friday, we're all going to know who it's going to be.
And Jake Hubenak is not in the running for this deal at this point, right? I mean, he played last
Hubenak,
year.
No, not really. He's a good guy. But these other two guys are probably more talented than he is, and they'll settle on one of those two.
Defensively, John Chavis had that unit playing pretty salty after, you know, a few years ago when they were giving up a lot of points. Yeah. But he lost some pretty good studs, man. I mean, he got some guys in the NFL now that were pretty good. Do they take a step back, or is the thought that they can hold that defense together?
Well, only time's going to tell us on that when they've got a lot of prospects. Obviously, they're trying to replace Deshaun Hall and Myles Garrett. They've got some linebackers they have to replace. Mm-hmm. We lost a linebacker who decided to transfer. I don't know exactly what caused him to transfer, but he's gone to SMU, a kid named Richard Moore, and so he's not going to be there. They've got a good secondary, but I just have to go out there and put them out on the field. That'll be our first clue as to how good this defense will or will not be this year.
How is Coach Sumlin, who is a guy I like, but how is he handling all the hot seat talk and pressure of, they got a new coach over there at Texas now, and, so there's that excitement going on in the state. How is he handling himself? Is he the same guy, or how does he handle this pressure?
Yeah, he's the same guy, and he's addressed a couple of times the fact that we have not finished well over the last two or three years. Mm-hmm. That we have an end-of-the-season slump. And he said that's something that they've got to address and they've got to turn around this year. As I was going out and speaking this summer, I knew I'd have to address, the story is that he's got to go 9-4 or he doesn't keep his job. I don't know if that's true or false. I have no idea. Only the athletic director actually knows that, even though I do know he made that comment on the Feinbaum show. Mm-hmm. But, again, we'll see how the season plays out. But what I did, I went back the last five years. We've been in the SEC. This is number six coming up. Alabama has the best record in the SEC. I think they're 64-7. Second best record belongs to Georgia. The third best record belongs to LSU. And then Texas A&M is fourth. And there's not that much distance between Georgia, LSU, and Texas A&M. So we've got teams, and you've been around it. You've coached. There are teams, schools in this country that would kill for an 8-5. Over the last 4 or 5 years versus what they had. But apparently some of the fans out there aren't happy about the 8-5. So we'll again see how this plays out.
Dave, I appreciate you so much. Hopefully we'll have a chance to talk to you during the season. It's a pleasure to listen to your work as we heard in those cuts there. We're going to make sure that you're in the Voices of the SEC tribute piece that we do each week this year. And we look forward to chatting again.
Oh, I look forward to it. And thank you very much for having me on.
All right, thank you. Dave South, the legendary voice of the Texas A&M Aggies. All right, we'll get a break. And when we return, we'll get an update with T-Mac. It's the Tom Abraham Show. 730-1039, The Ump.
Rough. Rough. This show is rough.
Hopefully this update will be smooth. It's a Doghouse Sports Report.
Auburn football player and former Last Chance U star John Franklin III will transfer from Auburn. Head coach Gus Malzahn announced today that he has made a decision to play elsewhere this season as a grad transfer. JF3 got his bachelor's from Auburn earlier this month and now seeks his fourth school in 5 years. Marvin Bagley, the number one basketball recruit in the 2018 class, has reclassified to the 2017 class shortly after he announced that he will play for the Duke Blue Devils this season. He is the latest recruit to reclassify since Andre Drummond in 2011. This decision now makes dunk sensation Zion Williamson the number one recruit for 2018. Duke now has their third number one recruiting class in 4 years. CBS reveals their booth pairings for the 2017 football season, which includes the lead announcing team of Jim Nantz, Tony Romo, and Tracy Wolfson. Romo will make his debut August 25th in the Chiefs-Seahawks preseason game. The trio makes their regular season debut in week one for the Titans-Raiders game. This trio will call the marquee games on Sundays and also Thursday night football games. CBS also added play-by-play caller Beth Mowins, who becomes the first female play-by-play caller for the network's NFL games. She will call Browns-Colts September 24th. And the Atlanta Braves dropped their first of a four-game series to the Rockies with a score of 3-0. You can hear Game 2 of the series tonight right here on The Ump. Coverage starts at 7:25. I'm Tony Mack, and that is your Doghouse Sports Report.
It'll be interesting to see how many games she gets because she's listed as the number 18. Well, think about it. There's 16 teams in each conference. So that weekend that she's doing a game, they have eight crews going out. So they must be rotating, you know, one of those crews at the bottom game. But interesting also that, you know, she gets the Browns game. Browns game off the top. You know, this thing with John Franklin III is curious to me. There must be some sort of a backstory to it. You know, there's got to be something else going on. It always takes a little while to hear what the rumors are. And, you know, Cole's plugged in, so he probably knows what is going on there. But, I mean, you know, a minute ago he was all excited about learning all four positions from a wide receiver spot. He was working as the flanker. Most of the time, he was working in the slot. He was a guy I thought that would be, you know, dynamic in that Swiss Army knife kind of role, maybe taking Wildcat snaps from Kerryon Johnson. And now he's transferring. He's just transferring as a receiver. What's up?
Yeah, he's going to go to play. He's going to go play for Lane Kiffin, too.
Oh, really? Is that where he's going?
That's where he wants to go. I'm pretty sure that's where he's headed.
Oh, I didn't see that part of the story.
10 seconds.
Didn't know that. That ought to be interesting. Just turn it into Misfit Island. All right, we'll be back. Rick Stevenson is next.